Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Here. Please join us for a moment of reflection. Thank you. Tonight, to help us with the flag salute, we have our friends from the Central Coast Exchange Club, Mr. Von Odermatt. Please join us, and if everyone would stand for the flag salute.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated, and Von, if you'd like to tell us up to the podium there with a microphone, and please tell us about the Exchange Club and some of your activities.
Well, I could go on and on and on and on, because I'm a new member of the Exchange Club, so I've got that lust and that excitement for the club right now that some of our members at 27 years still have, and that's why I love being a member of this club. Three main things that we focus on: Americanism, family, and child abuse prevention. Our work in the community exhibits this, and recently we've given away seven scholarships. We monthly recognize somebody who flies the flag in our community in the Five Cities area. We treat them to lunch, a plaque. We recognize them for their Americanism. And then we support a lot of other auxiliary nonprofits such as CASA that support our ambition of child abuse prevention. Currently, we're running our number one fundraiser. We are selling raffle tickets for $25, a book of 20 of them. What makes our raffle special is we base it on Monday Night Football. We don't just throw a whole bunch of numbers into a hat. We like to sell these books, and then each Monday night, your number, if the scores add up correctly, is the number that gets drawn. So we're out and about the community. If you know any Exchange members, feel free to hit us up for one of those books. I also donated through Slo County Info a website for the Exchange Club. We are found at ccexchangeclub.org. I just put together a webpage today on that website for the raffle tickets. Soon you'll be able to Google the raffle as well. Check us out online. If you'd like to get in communication with any of the members, that's the way to do it, ccexchangeclub.org. Thank you for the opportunity. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate your activities. This evening we have some closed session announcements, and I'll ask our city attorney to please make those announcements.
At the regular city council meeting of June 27th, council met for a conference with labor negotiator regarding the Arroyo Grande Police Officers Association, and the council provided direction to their negotiator. The second item was the public employee performance evaluation of myself, the city attorney, and there was no reportable action as a result of that meeting.
Thank you very much. I'll move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. We have no special presentations this evening, so that brings us to community comments and suggestions. Any member of the public is welcome to address the council on any item within the council's purview that is not on the agenda this evening. For those items that are on the agenda this evening, we'll have an opportunity to address each of those before the council takes action on those items. So for anything that is not on the agenda this evening, feel free to come up and make any comment.
Good evening, Council. My name is Brad Snook. I'm the chair of our county's chapter of Surfrider Foundation. It's been a while since our last discussion or statement. Our Ocean Friendly Gardens program coordinator, has worked with the county and others on the city level, including some, I guess, from Arroyo Grande, to bring in professional training to our community so that people can have their professional landscapers come in and install certified ocean-friendly gardens on their premises. Now, during the drought, everything that was learned from our communities turning over their gardens to conservation, permeability, and retention-focused landscaping have benefited us and will continue to benefit us as long as they stay focused on those three parameters: conservation, permeability, and retention. Now, in a community such as ours, landscaping can eat up about 40% of water consumption. So even if these landscapes have cut their consumption in half, that's sizable year after year after year. And that's something that I want to thank everybody in AG that has gone ocean-friendly as far as conservation and also their control of the runoff that gets into our watersheds, feeds down to the ocean, and then people like us swim in it. Also, our Hold On To Your Butt program. I don't know if you've seen Cynthia Ruppogel on TV recently, bringing up more awareness to cigarette butts and the effect that they could have in our watersheds and on our beaches. And she's worked with the city of Pismo Beach and is also working with the county at Avila to have the containers, cigarette butt containers, installed and approved signage around that. For Know Your H2O, I continue my advocacy with South County Sanitation District. The main focus is getting the community aware of water recycling efforts. I'll be at Pismo Beach's quarterly water quality meeting on Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock to find out more about what's going on from Pismo's perspective. But we're also active on South County Sanitation. I ask people to come in, attend those meetings, see what's going on, and be part of our move towards water reclamation. Thank you.
Is there a contact for people that wanted to discuss the green garden?
Yeah. Robert's email is ofg@slo.surfrider.org. Any of the other programs, our website has been updated. You can send a message to slo@surfrider.org. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other comment at this time? Okay, hearing none, I'll close the public comment and we'll move on to City Manager's Report. Mr. Bergman.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. Just two items tonight. The first is letting the council know that I served as an alternate for the city at the Cal JPIA board meeting on July 19th. That was last Wednesday in La Palma, where they elected their board of directors for the year. Second is an event coming up this week. So Friday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Grand Avenue is the car cruise. And that means the next day, Saturday, July 29th, is the car show, which is right here on Branch Street. And I believe you heard that not too long ago. So we invite everyone to come out and enjoy that those two events. And that's my shtick for tonight.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for that. We'll move on then to the consent agenda. And I'll ask our city attorney to make an announcement about item 9D.
Yes, item 9D on the agenda contains a recommendation for final action affecting salaries and benefits paid to agency executives. And new this year is some legislation that was previously passed that requires before the council takes action on an item that increases agency executive salaries benefits, there needs to be a oral announcement, a brief summary of that recommendation, that item. So I do need to announce that 9D is a recommendation to increase the city manager, department director, and other certain management employee salaries by 2% beginning July 14, 2017. It also includes an increase in the contribution toward health insurance and reduces the waiting period for short-term disability benefits. In addition, it includes a 5% equity adjustment for the accounting manager, planning manager, and building official positions effective July 14, 2017. The full details are provided in the staff report and associated resolution. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anything that any of the council members wish to consider separately on the consent agenda?
I'd like to consider 9G separately.
9G. Any others?
I just have some questions on 9I. I don't need to pull it, just some questions.
Okay.
Yeah, minor questions as well.
Let's start then with Councilmember Harmon for 9G.
Do we want to go ahead and move the other items approved, or do that separately?
We can consider them all if you have questions, or then if you want to consider the items separately, we can do that.
Okay,
otherwise,
very good.
Have your questions responded to.
Perfect. Thank you. So I know this is a receive and file item, but I do have some questions, mainly for my clarification and perhaps other people in our community. So I see Director Madoscu coming forward to assist me on this. Are you ready?
I am ready.
So I have four questions related to the Northern Cities Management Area annual report. And the first has to do with the staff report reference that there's also an annual report for the Napomo Mesa Management Area group. And I was wondering if that has been reviewed by our Northern Cities Management Area Technical Group and or our special counsel. And if yes, then does their report, there's so many N's and M's. If you'll bear with me, I'm going to say it each time without using the initials. So I'll see how much I get tripped up on. So there on page 2 of our staff report, there are 5 bullets specifically that the Northern Cities Management Area as well as the Napomo Mesa Management Area need to address in their annual report. So my question is, has the Napomo Mesa successfully and sufficiently addressed those 5 bullet points that are described on page 2 of our staff report? I know we have, but I wanted to know if we've had a chance to review and consider that.
Yes, thank you, Councilmember Harmon. Chris Magdoscu, Public Works Director. The answer is yes. Our attorney, legal counsel, Chris Campbell, has reviewed that document in conformance with the 5 bullet items outlined in your staff report, yes.
And for the record, it might be helpful if I just... They're here. Because I know everybody has read this report. Anyway, the 5 bullets that I was referring to are land and water use in the basin, sources of supply to meet those uses, groundwater conditions, including water levels and water quality, amount and disposition of developed water supplies, and amount and disposition of other sources of water supply and this would be in the Napomo Mesa Management Area. And then further, did Napomo Mesa Management Area successfully achieve the required 25% water use reduction via the governor's executive order?
Yes, they did reduce that water use by 25%, and they've been very successful in that, is what I understand.
And do you know if it's been ongoing? I know this was for 2016, but do you have any reports from the tech group that it's been ongoing, or did they just meet it and now they're creeping back up? Are they still doing a good job?
We're trying to meet with them actually very soon before the next case management action. It's another acronym. I forgot the other letter. But we're going to meet with them to kind of see where they're at with that since it's mid-year.
Okay.
And try to make sure they're staying with that throughout this year because of the rain season we have. We want to see if there's any changes along the way.
Okay.
Or any changes. But to our understanding, they've been very successful in achieving the 25%.
Okay, very good. Well, hats off to them, to Napomo Mesa. And then on page 53, this is actually a section of the actual report, and it's section 6.11 regarding the threats. And the threats identify that the reduced subsurface inflow from the Napomo Mesa southeast and east boundary continues to impact the Northern Cities Management Area, which is our area, and that groundwater recharge. So even with our conservation efforts, do we have any response from the Napoma Mesa related to their efforts to reduce or reverse this impact that appears to be butted up to their boundary related to our inability to increase our subsurface inflow and recharge?
So there's a depression forming down the Santa
Exactly.
Valley. And in groundwater terminology, the gradient would usually go from high to low, yet we're seeing things go the other direction. So we're trying to get with them to say what is going on because the depression is formed. And we want to meet with them really soon to say, hey, have you tried to do anything to provide us with information on why that's occurring? So we're still in the unknown phase at this point.
Okay, because it's my understanding that that depression has been well known for quite some time. I would be very interested to know what their response is to that, in addition to the fact that the Napomo Services District, I know that they were successful in finally hooking up their intertie. So they've increased it by 600 acre feet, but
still
I really would like to know where Napomo Mesa is on that. So we'll keep track of that.
Yes,
and then there was also a reference in your report related to above the trigger level of value, but there really wasn't anything specific. And all it read was that it was above the trigger value since December 2016. So the trigger value is 7.5 acre feet, or 7.5
feet.
And so where are we now in December related to that? Do we have more value there?
We're still monitoring the wells due to the fact that the quarterly monitoring report is done in around April, March, after the rains. So we're about due June, and the newest data isn't ready yet for analysis. We're going to hear that at probably the next NCMA meeting. But the good news was that that index level was at 10.75, so that's providing that head pressure to keep seawater intrusion from coming in. And we're happy with that number because that's 3 feet above.
Okay.
We don't believe it's going to go below 7.5 in the next round. That's our assumption, but we're going to wait for some new data after June's data is available for our review.
Okay, so currently we're 3 feet above the trigger, so
yeah.
I don't think we've heard that for quite a while. So
right.
That concludes my questions. I appreciate the clarification and connecting the dots for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnes, do you have questions on that?
Yes, thank you. So, Chris, on the monthly water supply and demand update, the information that was in that staff report, it appears that we are up 11% in our water use compared in June, compared with June a year ago in 2016. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And then we removed the restrictions in May or the end of April?
That's your April, second meeting in April, the restrictions were removed, and then we sent the letter out in early May. About a week or so after that. So that began the process of monitoring to see if the usage would increase.
Okay, and then I think I talked to Shane today, and in May we were up 4%.
Correct.
June, 11%.
Correct.
So we knew this would happen, and we're sort of waiting to see over a year's time, sort of for each month compared to the year before, how much we're up. I'll share some information during my Zone 3 report out at the end of the meeting regarding Lopez, and so my reason for bringing this up is that we are up 11%, and I know there is the belief that, you know, we're completely out of the drought here, and there is, when you look at the map for Zone 3, the San Luis Obispo County is still abnormally dry as far as the information from the state, and I would also remind everyone that Lopez is only 59% full, and the water that's normally draining into Lopez from the creeks out there some of them have stopped running, which isn't altogether odd, but some of them should possibly still be running. So just to remind people that while we did get a lot of rain, we need to really be careful about our water use going forward.
Thank you. I think the NMMA report is important enough that if with the council's concurrence, we might get a brief staff report just summarizing some of the highlights of that for maybe
okay with that direction to get a...
An MMA one? Is that...
For the northern cities.
And CMA.
And CMA.
Okay.
And CMA. Right.
So take this report and give a presentation about it.
Yes, yeah, just a brief a summary of the key points of the presentation.
All right, thank you.
And I would move for approval of the consent agenda items. Second. Okay. 9A through 9M.
Okay. Before we proceed on the consent agenda items, is there any public comment on any of the consent agenda items? That would be items 9A through 9M.
Ann McCracken, Harvest Festival Chairperson, addressing item 9K. I'm so excited. You know, we're rocking and rolling. We got a lot of new members to our committee. We have a secretary this year. We haven't had a secretary in like 4 years. So that tells you something, right? And it's going to be bigger and better. We are without our Big Ditch Derby. I'm sure you're all aware of that. But we're putting our heads together and coming up with something hopefully just as interesting. So if you've got any thoughts on that, let us know. And in the meantime, thank you so much for your approval again this year and all your support. It's wonderful. Thank you. And civility is back in Arroyo Grande. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anna. We're all looking forward to the Harvest Festival. Indeed. Is there any other public comment on items 9A through 9M, the consent agenda items? Hearing none, I'll close the public comment and ask for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. We have no public hearings this evening, no old business. One item of new business, item 12A, and I'll ask the city clerk to introduce item 12A.
Item 12A is consideration of approval of an agreement for consultant services for the East Grand Avenue Master Plan, Staff Project 14-003.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Ray.
Yes, I want to explain why I'm going to be recusing myself from this. I do have an FPC opinion based on my relationship with my boyfriend, with her now fiancé, with regard to RRM, and I'm not required to step down on this for the same reasons as stated in the prior written determination from FPPC, but because this item does touch the architecture department, and that is the department that he's in, just for optics and for cleanliness, I'm going to go ahead and recuse myself and allow the rest of the council to consider the item without me. So I'll be stepping down for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This item is before you. We're very excited to bring it before you tonight. It is concerning the East Grand Avenue corridor and the proposed East Grand Avenue master plan. And with that, I'm going to have Planning Manager Downing give a brief staff report, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Teresa. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Yes, this is a very brief staff report, 4 slides in total, including this title slide, which I'll just skip over now. So a little bit of background about the East Grand Avenue Master Plan project. It says it in your staff report, the city's made a number of previous attempts to encourage and incentivize investment along this corridor, and the corridor itself is stretching from Highway 101 to the westernmost city limits along East Grand Avenue. So three different zoning districts, Highway Mixed Use, Fair Oaks Mixed Use, and Gateway Mixed Use. Some of these previous attempts include actually zoning all of those mixed use instead of different, more limited commercial, and allowing for the mixed use residential aspects to be incorporated into projects, developing design guidelines for this corridor, developing an enhancement plan regarding public infrastructure. However, that enhancement plan was never
fully finalized and adopted by the council, but it's still there to help guide development along the corridor, as well as establishing the former East Grand Avenue Merchants Association. So we've done all these things in the past, hoping to incentivize property owners and developers and new property owners to really invest in the corridor and provide development of many different types of projects along the corridor. But we haven't seen the return on that investment as of yet. A little bit more recent, in 2015, we did issue a request for proposal for the East Grand Avenue Master Plan, and at that time we received no responses. We sent it directly to a number of different consulting firms and got no feedback, no bites on that. So we did reach out to consultants after the fact and kind of asked, why didn't you participate in this? Why didn't you respond to this? A lot of it had to do with the timing that it went out. So we went out at the beginning of the month of May 2015, which was a very busy time apparently for consultants. And the previous workload and their commitment of resources didn't allow them to add our project to it. But a number of the firms did say, keep us in mind if you ever go back out for this again. And so we stepped away. And in that time of stepping away, two big issues came up for the council, one of which was parking. The other economic development. So these were items that have been prioritized and set as council goals through the council goal setting process over the years. So in April and May, we released another RFP, and this time we revised it. We expanded on it. We included the parking study that was identified by the council. We included an economic analysis of the corridor and kind of refined those. We worked with a local consultant a little bit, who did responds to these things a lot. He helped wordsmith some of the finer points of the RFP to try and get additional responses. And this time we got one, and that's the RRM Design Group proposal that we did receive. We find that proposal to be a responsive proposal. We read through it, read through all of the criteria, and found that they are a responsive proposer. So we are recommending to move forward with their contract service tonight. So there's a few other items on the East Grand Avenue Master Plan proposal, but the top three are the parking study. This includes a number of different tasks, so looking at the existing conditions, what type of policies do we have in place, what type of existing parking requirements do we have in place, inventorying the supply of parking that's already along this corridor, and using the economic analysis that I'll talk about in a second, and kind of some of the realities of looking at a real parking demand in the future and creating some of those future demand scenarios based on how it's functioning now. So actually going out and monitoring peak use times, how impacted are some of these parking lots that we already have. And then based on those current use and future projections, actually making recommendations on what we can do parking-wise along the corridor, whether that be potentially creating some kind of parking district for the businesses to be included in, whether it's more city investment on public parking in the corridor, those types of things. Another big aspect of this project is the economic analysis portion. So that's actually taking a look at some of the demographic and economic trends. You know, we've heard recently that the economy is changing. The rise in Amazon and online shopping has shifted the economy from what it used to be. So we hear that, but really, what does that mean for us? What does that mean for this corridor? So looking at some of these retail demand analysis and actually looking and creating a land and economic strategy that goes along with that. So these two pieces specifically will tie in really nicely together. And then the third bullet, obviously very big in my world in planning, is the public participation, actually getting out there, using the previous work that's been done by the city. So all the workshops that we did during the mixed-use rezoning and the design guideline development and implementation, and actually using that, talking to stakeholders currently, so whether that be current developers, landowners, new landowners, potential landowners, former landowners, and just see really what, from their perspective, what the issues are, where the opportunities are, try and get all of that buy-in, and then also having these, the new thing in the planning world is the pop-up workshop, so actually rather than inviting the public to a fixed location and saying, please give us your time, we go where they are. And actually, if they're at the car car show or the Harvest Festival, for instance, actually going there, having people in that event, talking to them there. It's a little less time investment on their part, but we find that those actually get a lot of really good responses. So doing all that work to make sure that all the voices are heard, all the public voices are heard, and we've heard it, you know, a number of times throughout the last few years that, you know, we need investment on the corridor. So trying to figure out what does investment mean to folks. So those are the big hot topics of the East Grand Avenue Master Plan. So the recommendations are outlined in your staff report. They do include a number of different funding allocations and authorizing the city manager to execute some contingencies. But with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can. And I know that the representative from RRM is here to, if you have questions for him as well.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions? Staff? Councilmember Harmon?
Thank you.
I think the majority of my questions, I think, are going to be directed to staff, but I appreciate the RRM representative being here as well. So this has to do with explaining to me the RFP process a little bit. Not so much the process, but I'm familiar when we go out to bid for or go out for RFP request for proposal. In the public works and engineering world, there's usually a cost estimate, or there's usually a cap related to that. And so I'm asking, was there an estimated bid amount for this RFP? Does this process work similar? And so can you explain how we came up with $217,000?
Certainly, I note that it is different. These types of studies and plan development are different than capital projects, and oftentimes we would include a budgeted amount, and sometimes we don't. We've done it both ways. In this case, we went out in the first round, and while we didn't publish an amount, we did respond to inquiries, the routine inquiries, with an anticipated amount. And the second round, we also kept out an amount, but we really were wanting to know how each team, consultant team, and for this type of development, we expected teams to propose, would allocate the resources to each task and break them out without it being dictated to them. And we found it informative, and in this case, again, as Mr. Downing has explained, we did review it carefully, and we believe it's reasonable and responsive.
Okay, thank you for that. So I know we've been in a situation where we've received only one response, and I know you just indicated that this one happens to be responsive, but I needed to ask, why not just reject this RFP, hold off, restructure it, and, I don't know, wait 6 months to move forward to see if perhaps maybe the consultants aren't as busy as they were. So I just wanted your take on that, to give me some insight on that.
We've reached out prior to the putting this proposal out. We actually had assistance from a consultant help us put this together, a particular consultant not proposing, but that does propose on these types of things. We've got some good insight there. I think fully prepared, we have done this in the past. If we don't like the bid or bids or proposals we receive, we'll certainly hold the opportunity to go back out. In this case, I would just emphasize we think it's very busy out there. We think that did hamper the amount of proposals we've received. We may get some more proposals. I don't know if they would be, I don't have any confidence, frankly, that they would be better, and I would have some expectation that the price would be right in the same ballpark or more.
Can you tell me how the East Grand Avenue Master Plan that has been being worked on differs from the East Grand Avenue Enhancement Plan? That's the one that's been worked on and
Certainly. So we have a written plan that we commonly refer to as the East Grand Avenue Enhancement Plan. This is a streetscape improvement plan. It's focusing on infrastructure of the street frontage improvements. It was completed in 2002. And so I would say it's one component that we will continue to utilize in the East Grand Avenue Master Plan that we're seeking to prepare right now. Again, this is a full corridor approach. It's going to include the parking, the economic analysis, as well as the development plan, as well as infrastructure improvements that were well laid out and mostly probably still applicable, but probably does certainly need updating. So we'll incorporate all that work in the plan and evaluate it along with the other components for a whole corridor plan.
Okay, very good. And because we have the enhancement plan, even though it's archaic, are there cost efficiencies and maybe redundancy prevention? Can any part of that enhancement plan be used to assist with the master plan formation?
Certainly, and absolutely, we fully expect, and we have a strong expectation by virtue of our RFP that the existing work done then and from that point to now would be utilized in this plan. We don't have any need to reinvent that wheel. We intend to incorporate new information with the existing information for a package plan.
Very good. So how much, well, maybe just kind of take a stab at it related to how much did the 2007 to 2010 economic downturn, recession, et cetera, contribute to the lack of the investment anticipated from the 2001 incentives? I know Planning Manager Downing referred to the items that were outlined in the staff report, and so I'm trying to gauge if we do have some kind of idea that the incentives didn't work because nobody was doing anything because we had no economy at that time. So I'd like you some insight on that.
Certainly. I don't have a yes or no to this. I think that the bottom line is that back in the early 2000s, we made a pretty drastic change from a strict commercial corridor to a mixed use. We started allowing that residential density along the corridor, and at that time made some pretty significant changes in our zoning code to allow for that in terms of development standards. And then put it out there. By the time that was really going, sure enough, the recession hit. So I'm sure there's a large influence of that. However, to what degree did it prohibit or were there obstacles created through that economic time or through city processes? It's really hard to gauge. I think we are in a prime position now to capitalize on better, stronger market conditions and really try to remove those obstacles to growth and then build in potential incentives to get what we want on that corridor. And I think that's the opportunity we're exploring here with this plan.
Okay, thank you. What is the nexus to appropriate $70,000 from the city's Affordable Housing Fund and the $38,000 from the local sales tax fund?
Certainly, trying to look at appropriate ways to fund this effort and utilizing not only as anticipated planning consultant fees or budgeted amounts that were set aside for planning projects, but also looking at the housing fund as a source to implement the housing policies in our general plan. This is a corridor where we have our highest densities allowable in the city, up to 25 dwelling units per acre, higher than any residential densities elsewhere in the city. This is where we're supposed to put our affordable housing and our housing that is more affordable. And how are we going to get it done? I think it's the nexus is clear for utilization of some of those housing budgeted amounts. And as regards the sales tax funds, 38,000 of that is being requested to be appropriated for this effort. Again, looking at this corridor as a targeted corridor through several of the land use elements, not only housing, but also our economic development element, our land use element, and really anticipating that the increase in opportunities for commerce and commercial services and mixed use development will pay us back in the long run in terms of additional retail and additional sales tax. And that's in addition to anticipated infrastructure improvements that would go along with that development. Again, acknowledging that parking and frontage improvements are a part of this plan.
Can you also describe, and I know you've described the need to capitalize and the market is good, and you've also indicated some factors as why now is the time to move forward. But I think in terms of budget related to the $120,000 that is in the planning division for contractual service budget, I'd really like to know why this master plan is so vital to expend all but $10,000 of your appropriation for contractual services. So if you can explain the thought there.
Certainly, contractual services money has been set aside and earmarked essentially for our general plan implementation and general plan updates, specifically our circulation element and our land use element. And we are in need of doing that. We've been chipping away at our circulation element to a large degree, and we do need to continue to have funding available to finish that up. So, therefore, you know, we're looking at other opportunities and appropriate opportunities for us to go after this particular plan that is very much emphasized to implement other elements of the general plan, and as well as incorporate two of the top, you know, priorities identified by the City Council. We are hearing a lot about needing to go to the west end of town to really put resources there to develop that, being very successful with the community's hard work over the years in the village, and that's been emphasized in the community by council and certainly by our general plan.
And then can you remind me if we weren't kind of piecing elements piece by piece and we just decided, you know, let's just do a comprehensive general plan update, can you give me an estimate of what that general plan, just go doing a comprehensive one, you know, what's the market rate on that now?
So I wouldn't anticipate being able to accomplish a comprehensive general plan update for less than $1 million these days. And you know, in a perfect world where we just, you know, have resources at our disposal, it's a great way to accomplish a general plan update.
Sure.
However, we'll accomplish it as well
as we can.
Each element.
I mean, that's a big eye-opener. I mean, I knew it was in the six figures, didn't realize it had the million behind it, so thank you for that. And then this goes to the parking study. I know in the RFP, it was itemized at about $71,000. And I don't know if you can help me with, does that seem to be a comparable market rate? Does it have to do with the types of components that we're requesting in the parking study? Has there been any consideration, for any reduction in that? Or, was there some creative thinking on that related to the $71,000? I'm thinking if we did this on our own, where would we be at? Estimated.
Sure. I'll offer some general observations, and Matt, you may want to follow up. We have observed that there is a wide range of costs related to parking studies for municipalities. We've been looking at this in the past several months since it's been set as a council priority, and there's lots of approaches out there, and there's just considerable cost, considerable range of costs. We do feel that the proposed parking component is a good fit for what we need to have that evaluated for the corridor and perhaps applicable to other commercial districts. And we have engaged in with the consultant discussions on how best to make sure that costs are efficient in that. And Matt, you may want to follow up.
Absolutely. So, as Teresa mentioned, it depends on what you want to get out of your parking study and what information you have available. But in looking at the proposal on the parking study itself, it hits all the major groups that I went over earlier. And what the consultant WTrans, who would do the parking study, has done is actually looked at where they can get the efficiencies. So using the remote data that they have available, so rather than sending a team of consultants down to do all of the work, they'll do a lot of it from their home offices using Google Earth. And one thing that I'm really excited about is actually flying drones to do the survey monitoring work, rather than having multiple people stationed at multiple points to do all that monitoring. They can fly a drone for an extended period of time and capture that data. So they are taking some efforts to try and reduce that data collection cost, and they'll follow it up just with text to come down and verify the things that they can't see or that the tree is blocking and things like that. So they have taken some steps to try and reduce that cost.
That's very creative. Okay. And then in the staff report, it refers to that there will be a dedicated planning staff that will perform specific tasks. And so in general, can you explain exactly how our planning manager will be involved and about how much time you think? And I'm asking about time because also in the staff report it says, that one of the needs for this consultant is because of staff resources and where the priorities are. So if you can address those two things for me.
Certainly, I think incorporating this into our work program was anticipated through the use of consultants. Certainly, if we tried to prepare this plan in-house, we wouldn't be able to do it with our current work program needs. I would anticipate significant time to be allocated for our staff time to this to make sure that obviously we're very invested in the outcome of this plan. We will have high expectations for it. Matt will be the lead person, and I would foresee certainly a good day or just shy of that, a week dedicated to that, and other staff will be involved. Of course, engineering and planning staff will be also involved in throughout the whole effort, but that's going to be at varying amounts, and that would be difficult to sort of spit out at this particular time.
And then the specific tasks that they'd be required to do, have we identified those?
So as Matt explained, there'll be certainly a big component.
evidence of the plan being technical in nature, the parking and the economic analysis, and there'll be a push at the beginning to supply data to the consultant and to, you know, zero in on how to approach some of those tasks. And then the component in terms of planning staff will certainly come in terms of analysis of what comes out of those technical efforts, how best to get what we need out of that to prepare in the plan preparation, and certainly the public outreach component. They'll be dedicated, consultant staff are dedicated to that, but city staff will also be integral and involved in that effort to make sure that the correct stakeholders are involved, everybody's heard, and things specific to our community are certainly incorporated into that public participation effort. And, of course, bringing it forward through commissions and committees. Sure. And back to you.
And then with that, I think there was also reference to, with our staff's input, that we could actually have some cost reductions realized on that. Considering how comprehensive this has been thought out, do you have any estimates about what that will save in additional, you know, consulting costs? I think that's the right way to approach it.
We did certainly look at ways to reduce costs, and in general, I'll just say that there are some ways we could probably reduce costs, but that's going to increase staff workload, so there's
right.
certainly a direct relationship, and whenever you approach something like this, you're going to get expertise and perspective from the consultants that are very valuable. Given that, we did look at some ways. We looked at the public participation component entirely, for example. Matt, you have the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. So we originally were looking at, well, you know, the public outreach is a large part of this this work effort, and it's something that we could theoretically do in-house, which would be a cost savings of about $14,000. In talking to the consultant, part of their hesitation on that is they're the experts on our behalf who are developing this plan. So if we take over full control of those public outreach efforts, they're not there hearing what the community is saying. And the more typically, like what we've experienced on the Halcyon Road Complete Streets Plan project, is when you have multiple experts in a room and they're all hearing the different nuances from folks, you do get a much better representation of everybody's voice. So that would be an option, although maybe not necessarily as recommended as much. But there are other mechanisms, mainly through the bringing in through the committees and commissions phase to the council. So instead of having the consultants dedicated to be here to present to, let's say, traffic commission or planning commission, staff can do that. Staff can work on the bulk of the staff report themselves and give the presentation and answer questions, and likely have the consultant here for the council's ultimate consideration of the plan. But still, to try and work in the range of this, about the same $14,000 or so cost savings. But we can, and I've talked to the consultant about this quite a bit. They understand where we're coming from. They know, you know, the sticker shock of the $217,000. It's something to not just pass blindly. And so they're definitely willing to work with us through the project to reduce the cost where we can. But as Director McClish mentioned, that does put the burden back on staff.
Sure.
And we might be able to accomplish things with our planning interns or other volunteers in the community. But on those days when something needs to get done and there's nobody there to do it, and if it ends up being me, it ends up being me. So, you know, those are kind of the trade-offs and checks and balances.
No, I appreciate that that perspective. And then this kind of brings into, so what safeguards are there that staff is not going to actually be doing the work promised by the consultant?
So that's contract management, and we fully will make sure to prioritize and make sure that's the contract is adhered to. And we certainly don't want to have all the expertise at our disposal and
do it ourselves. That's just not beneficial to anybody. So we're looking forward to utilizing a full service firm with their subs and getting a really good product out of this. We'll make sure of it and ensure it through our contract manager.
Okay. Just three more, and they're quick. What are the applied practical outcome or measured results of investment or economic gain anticipated from this plan? And I ask that question because I know not only the expense, time staff, or the time that staff is involved with, but it's kind of like, what are we getting from this plan? You know, what is this amount of money being spent? You know, is there any way to equate that to dollars, return, outcome? Or is it just going to be a presentation, and I don't mean this facetiously, but is it just going to be a presentation where, look at all this great stuff, and then for whatever reason, and maybe priorities that are dictated by yours truly, nothing really happens with that. So if you can kind of explain what we're going to get, where's our bang for our buck here on outcomes that we hope to achieve?
Well, I have a bigger comfort level in knowing what we'll get if we don't do it.
You can go that way too.
But I certainly don't have a dollar figure of our anticipated revenue generation from this plan. I could certainly anticipate that with a successful plan, we're well poised to seize opportunities to increase revenue in terms of investment development along the corridor, which will presumably include some additional retail and then services and property value increases. We've looked at some things. We've looked at, what if we get an increase in square footage of retail on the corridor? How much would that be? What if we get just a little bit? What if we get, I think I ran an example of 15,000 square feet of retail. What does that actually generate? In that, if you look at a pretty not stagnant but reasonable or conservative amount of $250 per square foot would yield, what that taxable income would be, and then ultimately what kind of dwindles down to us at the end of the day. Well, something like that, something like 15,000 square feet of retail space additionally would yield somewhere in the realm of, 18 plus $1,000 in local sales tax revenue. So every little bit helps, and that's not including the infrastructure improvements we get with that, the property values, the catalyst effect of that development along the corridor. And that's kind of what we see here on this side of town. This is what we would be after, certainly, on the west end of town, and that's where that economic analysis is kind of critical in terms of looking at what types of retail, what types of industry are going to be beneficial to the city in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, and where we're going to get the biggest ultimate return on investment on that corridor, and that's our corridor.
And so with all of that, do you see a benefit specifically to aid developers that may want to choose our city to invest? Is that also a part of this master plan that, I don't know, would it help direct them or, again, using that word incentivizing them to come here?
Yep, certainly. What we hear often is the big ask in terms of investors or developers is, please provide us clarity of what you want, clarity of the rules, and please provide us some degree of certainty if we bring in exactly what you say you want that we'll actually get it approved. And while that seems very easy to provide, you know, sometimes it's more difficult. I think this plan is certainly an opportunity to say here is what we want, and here's what we expect in terms of parking and the form of the development, and you know that should certainly provide them what they're asking for in that way.
I'm glad to hear that. Last two questions. Do you anticipate whether it's now or sometime in the future, any kind of cost recovery for the $217,000, $210,000 for this master plan?
I guess I would say yes over time.
Sure. Okay. And then lastly, I noticed in the proposal that and needed clarification, is the city paying for travel expenses to the co-consultants or out of area staff? I need to understand why the city would be paying for those travel expenses if this is an organization that is choosing the co-consultants that they need to include in the proposal that we may entertain. And so I'd like to know why we're paying, if we are, the travel expenses.
Certainly, yes, travel expenses are an expense of the proposal. That's the industry standard, if you will. It's preferable, obviously, to have all the expertise and time that's available to consultants locally here, and we have a local consultant. The subs aren't, but I think that we have what you know that is needed in terms to get the expertise we're looking for this particular proposal. And given that folks are busy, we got a local proposal. We got a local firm, just with subs that aren't local to our county.
Okay, thank you very much, and I appreciate all of the information.
Thank you. Just first, the RFP that was written by staff, I was really impressed by that, the amount of detail and thought that went into it. It wasn't cut and pasted. I mean, it was really, really dialing down on what we want from the consultant and what we don't want. So we're not going to waste money if we go forward on a bunch of information we already have. It's like, let's just get to the meat of the matter. Here's what we want. So I appreciate that, and I was I thought that was done excellently. Let's see, the $70,000 Affordable Housing Fund. Councilmember Harmon already touched on the nexus, and that was a question I had, as well as the nexus for the $38,000 for the local sales tax. But what is the balance in our affordable housing fund before we potentially use the $70,000?
Absolutely. So I did look at this earlier today. In the fiscal year 2017-18 budget, it's estimated to be about $380,000 or so. And that's before the East Grand Avenue Master Plan. So if the council decides to appropriate the $70,000 as recommended, it would be sitting at about
$310,000. Okay. And that's all generated from the affordable housing in lieu funds from developers, correct? Yes. Okay. And then I know that you spoke about that part of this, because of the nexus for the affordable housing, that we're hoping that we will have some parcels identified where we can build affordable housing, possibly with what we've done in the past is with partnerships with People's Self-Help Housing. And I know that People's really wants to work with agencies, but really with larger parcels, because that's what pencils for them. So when looking at, is this plan really going to net us some affordable housing, especially since we're using $70,000, did staff look at are there a couple? Because are we using money that is something that is really going to gain us affordable housing, the potential?
So, yes, we did look at this. It's also a requirement of our housing element. You may recall that the state has us look at actual opportunity sites and allocate, you know, what's reasonable in terms of potential housing supply in the future. And beside that, for this particular plan, we looked at the size of the largest parcels or the largest opportunities, and there are at least three on the corridor that we could expect would be enticing for a partner developer to come in with some affordable housing project.
Okay, thank you for that. And then on page 2 of the staff report, there is a mention that the consultant will do a real estate market study, and they will give us some projections of development. And I thought that sounded great, but I don't know how that is really possible. How can they look into the future and give us an idea of what going forward we're going to see in the way of development?
So this component would be performed by Cosmo companies, and they are certainly a very capable firm. I've heard about them for many years, and we're working with them on some other projects. Their economic analysis is inclusive of looking at undersupplied retail, competitive analysis, expenditure analysis, and they have performed these types of studies, obviously, for varied sizes of cities, including small cities. I've had the opportunity at different conferences to talk to folks from other cities, both our size and bigger, and folks have been very pleased and very impressed with the information and the recommendations that can come out in some of these studies, and particularly with this consultant. So I'm really looking forward to this component of this particular plan.
Okay, thank you. And then how do we plan on keeping, or how does the city staff, or how does RRM plan on keeping the plan fresh? Because with trends changing, I mean, we see within 6 months, all of a sudden, there's some sort of a different trend in shopping and what consumers do. So if we pay all this money for this plan and it sits on the shelf, and a year from now, 2 years from now, 4 years from now, what do we do to sort of update it, if you will? And the only thing I thought of, if there was included in the price, sort of an annual check-in from RRM as far as development code amendments, hey, this is brand new, we thought about this for AG, this is something that would work real well, so is that something we can possibly negotiate with the consultant to include, or is that something that is sometimes included? Because I hate to spend all this money and then it just is outdated in a couple years.
Certainly the evolving marketplace is important and challenging, and the plans will come out with recommendations and implementation measures. I actually like the idea of having the experts come in and weigh in at the annual point, for example, and I would just pose that to the RRM representative to see what their thoughts might be on this.
Hello, good evening. My name is Josh Cross. I'm with RRM Design Group. And in terms of ways we can keep the plan fresh is by incorporating really flexible development standards and design guidelines to encourage that development. We want to provide a wide range of, you know, land uses to attract the greatest variety of development. We definitely would be more than happy follow up on an annual basis, check in on the plant. It's in our backyard. We live here. We play here. I mean, Debbie Rudd, my the principal planner, couldn't be here tonight because she has a pig at the fair. So you know, we're invested in the county.
Pig's more important than us. Yeah. All right, whatever.
So we that seems like a really reasonable request and something we would be happy to do.
If you had a rooster, we'd be very impressed.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thank you for that. Okay, well, hold. If we go forward, please hold them to that because I think that's a good idea, and I think that's important. And then let's see, form-based development. I sort of remember what that is, but can you just refresh my memory and maybe the public as well, because that's what they'll be looking at, the consultant in this plan.
Certainly one of the potential tools is form-based coding, form-based standards. That means, generally speaking, you tell folks through your code what you want. You want three-story buildings. You want zero setbacks. You want courtyards. You want vertical mixed use, whatever you want. And in terms of structure and form, you rely less on uses. So that structure can house a variety of uses. It's less you have less emphasis on that than you do on actual architecture and form. That's just one of the many tools.
Okay, thank you for that. And then last question. On page 17, the consultant has noted that they will prepare, maybe Cosmont will prepare preliminary strategies as far as economic development. And so my question is, will included in this plan, will Cosmont be reaching out to businesses, or will that be on staff after the plan is completed? Here's what we think would go great here, or this would work here, and then they give it to us, or will during this implementation or when they're actually working with the plan, will they be doing that work and being the connection between other businesses that might want to relocate to Arroyo Grande?
Yeah, I expect that to be done during the plan development, hand-in-hand with the stakeholder participation, which is a business community, both existing here and which might be invited here as well.
Okay, our business community for the reach out and the feedback, but I'm talking about if XYZ business wants to come to Arroyo Grande and they think there's a perfect parcel for them because of all this information they know that we don't, they'll be reaching out to them and making that connection and putting us together, or will
that?
That
is my expectation as part of their work. And that's essentially, you know, they're in this, this is their business, and they deal with folks, developers, all up and down the state and around us all the time. So if they see the opportunity here, they won't wait until the plan is complete to introduce them to our community.
Okay. Okay. All right. Those are my questions for now. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
No questions that prior council members pretty much covered. Thank you.
My only remaining question, I guess, is to expand a little bit on Kristen's question about reaching out to the existing businesses. I know we have one business certainly on
stakeholder outreach in this plan, so we know really what opportunities might be kind of simmering out there. We know of some, and we do have some certain activity kind of brewing on the corridor, I believe. And so, again, I think the timing is really good for this, but that would certainly be something we would work on with COSMON and RRM.
Okay, thank you. I think that's the... Unless there's any other questions, is there public comment on this item?
Good evening. Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. I know I've been to meetings about all this, and I forget what my input has been. So I'm wondering, who would I contact about some of the parking and concerns I might have? And another thing I'd like to say, the last revitalization that was done on that corridor, I remember the Spencers were very involved with that. I think it might be a really good thing to reach out to the Spencer family and find out what was done back then, and what worked, what didn't work, and maybe that will help us move forward with this. I'm kind of bothered by one bid. I got to say, being a homeowner, I don't have a project that needs to be done in my house, such as a new roof, and get one bid and just go with it. I know that we've worked with RRM before. I don't have a problem with RRM, but to only get one bid into somebody very local, I hope that we're not getting really comfortable with certain people and just not really expanding to look for other companies to work with who might have different ideas or fresher ideas. And that's all my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Okay, hearing none at this time, I'll come back to council. Is there the question related to who can one contact for to express concerns or thoughts about parking, for example, or other issues related to this? Is there a staff contact for those kinds of concerns?
I would direct those to the project manager, which would be Matt Downey. Of course, you could talk to any staff member. I'm happy to talk to folks as well, and I fully expect to. But in terms of cataloging and keeping open communication with the consultant, Matt will be the point person.
Thank you very much. Discussion?
Do you want any little comments?
Yes, comments.
I don't have any other discussion, but I'll go ahead and lead comments, and then maybe that'll lead to some discussion. I guess my initial reaction when I saw the price tag, I thought the $210,000, because that makes me feel a little better, was actually staggering. But there was a lot of discussion with staff. Some of that occurred this evening. And then further analysis, I was able to feel less concerned about it. And then also when I was reminded that $71,000 is actually for a parking study that not only the city council has identified as a priority and goal, but our planning commission has also expressed a real desire to have that as a high priority. So that increases the cost significantly with that parking study in there. And because it is a priority, I think I'm a little bit more comfortable related to the price tag on this. I also wanted to address, I did have, and that's why I asked the question, why not just reject it and go back to the drawing board? But I was also impressed with staff's explanation that this is a process that started back in 2015. My concern is, as we've witnessed in 2007-2010 era, basically, that we started this in 2015. If we were successful then in getting a bid, we probably already have a plan. During 2015 and 2016, we've had a lot of economic development, and the East Grand Avenue corridor is an example of that. Some of the remodels and new businesses that have come in. So I was leaning to just saying, let's just wait and not move on it, but I'm concerned that we have another economic downturn expected. If we don't get something on the map, or at least in process, then how can we really utilize the opportunities that we have before perhaps there won't be as many offers on the table? So I'm okay with the one bid. Usually I would not be. I also appreciate that the firm is local. I also know that a goal buried down on the list, and also at least a comprehensive economic analysis plan has been pushed to the foot, even though our overall economic development is part of our city council goal. So this master plan includes a critical element as well, in addition to the parking, for that real estate market study, which is something that we've also talked about for the last 2 years, on how we can more successfully target and get people to come here and invest in our city. I also appreciate that this firm understands our city dynamics. They literally spelled it out in their RFP. I think that's a huge gain for us. And I also believe because of that, the product outcome will also be compatible and well-suited for our city, and it will be outcome-driven and meaningful for us to actually use it as a document. I think the main thing for me is that this master plan will provide the clarity. I think that was what was said, to provide the clarity of rules and a degree of certainty for our developers. Since I've been on council, that has been something and a goal that we've been moving toward. Just tell me what you need me to do. I'm the developer, and I'll do it. But let's be clear and what we want them to do. So I think emphasizing that, it'll be much more user-friendly for the developers, and hopefully then we'll encourage them to really want to invest the not only the risk, but the investment into our city. And then I do support and I appreciate Councilmember Barnich's request. I think it is an excellent idea to have a look back, do an annual check-in, keep this plan fresh. Any trends that we hear, how does that change? I appreciate the RRM representative, Josh, explaining the ideas, you know, how they would do that related to the design guidelines and land use. And then lastly, you know, for someone who, like myself, who have been, you know, kind of beating the drum to enhance East Grand and the west side of our city, I really want to use this as an opportunity to reach one of my goals of creating a cohesive corridor that starts from the village and it's not separated by the overpass of the 101, and that at some point we can, you know, have a huge corridor that mirrors maybe not exactly the village, because we have to bring in, you know, buildings from 1900 and move them, and, you know, that just gets complicated. But anyway, seriously though, you know, I think that that's one of the good things about this, and outweighs to me this big price tag right now of the over $200,000 to do it. I think we can get a lot of gain from it, and I want a cohesive corridor, doggone it. So that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. So regarding the one bid, I'll just say that, you know, we did put the request for proposals out there twice. Maybe it's not a lot of money for other companies. Maybe it's not a big enough price tag for some of the bigger, you know, out-of-town consultants. I don't really think that, I think if we had only done it once, then I would have some reluctance. But twice, I think that, I mean, what are we going to do, beg people, drag them here, make them work for us? So I'm okay going ahead with that. Like Councilmember Harmon, I was surprised by the price tag. I really spent a lot of time really going over the RFP and then the proposal back from RRM. And, you know, the truth is that the parking as well as economic development, we've been talking about economic development since I was on Planning Commission, and we keep talking about East Grand Avenue and how it has so much potential because of the underdevelopment of some of the parcels, and it is stagnant down there. Not, I mean, we do have pockets of development that has come in, it's very successful, and I don't see a reason why we can't have that success everywhere. And I'm really concerned with if we didn't move forward with this, and then we have another recession, and then, you know, 8 years from now, we're right back here again. So I really want to move quickly on this. I want to get to work on this so that we can spur on development, because I think the potential is really huge. And I did dig into that proposal by RRM, and I was impressed with not only the resumes of the people that are working for them, but also looking at all the projects they've done in Slo County, but also outside of Slo County. And I've been to some of those downtowns like Calabasas, seen some of the before and after pictures of the revitalization of some of the projects they've worked on is really, really impressive. I mean, I was getting excited just looking at some of the things they've done, and they have a really great track record, and it showed. They really highlighted that, obviously, in the proposal, so I'm excited about that. And then I just began asking myself, I don't see how we can not afford to do this, because I think this is going to pay us back tenfold, and I'm actually excited even more because of the consultant and the projects they've done, and I can see it on paper because of the potential that I can see happening down on Grand Avenue. And also the affordable housing, because we need apartment housing. We need small one-bedroom units, two-bedroom units, whether it's for purchase or for rentals. We don't have that. This is sort of a new idea, and I think someone like a consultant that has seen this done in other cities successfully can help us, because we were told with the last project we looked at with the housing above the mixed use that would be really hard to rent out. No one would really want to live there. And I don't know if I quite believe that. So I really want to find out if what other cities have done and if it's been successful and how can we make that successful. That's it. So I'm ready to move ahead. I'm excited and I'm looking forward to the product. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm pretty much in agreement with what's been previously said. I will say that I was leaning towards not approving it strictly based on cost, but the staff and the planning manager convinced me. So it was not the staff report that convinced me. It was your presentation tonight. So it was that extra kind of explanation that really kind of helped me get over the hump. I would say a couple things. I agree with Kristen's issue about this idea of affordable housing and where you put it. I'm convinced that we could have and should have done it, and I think that's a big issue. Another thing that's always driven me crazy about these plans is whether they end up gathering dust and end up not being a living, breathing document that really helps people. So I would propose that the city manager at some point in the future, and it's probably going to mean years in the future, just take a look back and as a kind of a debrief and kind of a learning curve and just saying, okay, well, we went through this process with these goals and these ideas. How well did it actually all turn out? We thought we would get this. How close were we to getting what it is we were trying to accomplish? Because if we just do this and we don't do that exercise later on, I think we're missing out on improving things. So, and I don't think you can do that in a year. I don't think you can probably do it in 2 years, but, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years. Somebody needs to look at this and go, was this a worthwhile endeavor based on what we were trying to do at the time we did it? So, but with that, I'm more than willing to approve it at this point.
Okay, my concerns on the one bid, I think the one bid, staff has indicated that it's reasonable, and with the costs of doing, for example, an entire general plan, this gets us parts of that at a much more reasonable cost. I think the proposed contractor is not only local but experienced far beyond the borders of our local area. So I'm glad that they were responsive to our proposal or our request for proposal, and that we can have an opportunity to move forward with this. The opportunity for workforce or affordable housing is something that we very much need. Economic development has certainly been a goal of our council from my time on the council, certainly. I think that we've talked about flexibility in the plan, which is necessary, but also the need to provide certainty for developers so that we're not going to change the rules on them 2 years down the road. To give them that certainty that if they do that, if they do what we ask, that they will be expedited through the process and will receive reasonable and timely reviews. I think that's very important. Parking, in my view, has impeded business in several areas of the city and has also been a problem in residential areas in certain parts of the city. So I think the emphasis that we put on parking and the parking study here will have a great benefit to the city, and certainly a benefit as we look to develop the Grand Corridor. So I think that's, I'm very happy that that's a part of the plan, and I think that's going to provide very valuable information. I think Council Member Mayor Pro Tem Brown's idea of doing a review process a couple years down the road, and how successful have we been with this, is something that we should look at not only here but probably for other endeavors going forward, as a lessons learned kind of thing, if you will, just to review what went well so that we can recreate and reiterate that, and what didn't do so well so we can look at changing that. I think that's the hallmark of smart management, that we do look in the rearview mirror a little bit and see as we go forward with projects what works and what doesn't. So I'm also excited about this. I think it's a great opportunity for the city to move forward, and I'm prepared to support it tonight. So
I would move for approval by the City Council of consideration of an agreement for consultant services for the East Grand Avenue Master Plan, Staff Project 14-003. Do you want me to read the rest of that? Okay.
Two more.
Approve and authorize the mayor to execute an agreement for consultant services with RRM Design Group in the amount of $217,871. Authorize the city manager to approve contingencies not to exceed 10% or $21,787, and appropriate $70,000 from the Affordable Housing Fund and $38,000 from the local sales tax fund.
Second. Do we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Burnage?
Yes.
Mayor Hill?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Brown?
Yes.
Okay. Item passes 4-0 with one recused, and I'll invite Councilmember Ray back.
She was back there.
Did you eat candy?
Okay, moving to City Council reports. There was a meeting almost unexpectedly of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. I was out of the area, and Mayor Pro Tem Brown was kind to attend that for me, so I will ask him to make that report. There was no meeting of the Briscoe Halcyon Interchange Subcommittee. agency had dissolved, Royal Grandy Redevelopment Agency meeting was canceled, and there were no other meetings during that period of time. Mayor Pro Tem Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Slocock didn't meet, Regional Transit Authority did meet, and two items came up that were important. One was the new facility they're building in Paso. They're very excited about. They were able to use a piece of land that was pretty unusable because of drainage problems and water problems, and engineer it so they can use it. And then the other thing is the environmental document is going through for their new garage that they have in San Luis Obispo. So that's out in the public, and so we'll see how that goes. Integrated Waste Management Authority did not meet. South County Transit did meet, and as was on the consent agenda, what we approved, and that was the changing of the vendor for the senior shuttle because they were able to get it at a much better rate by a reputable vendor. I'm very excited about that because I think it portends what might be coming forward for some other transportation issues that we have. Briscoe Interchange Subcommittee did not meet. It's my hope that the environmental document will be out in public shortly, though. So that's key, and that's very important. Regarding the South County Sanitation District, it was a very short meeting. We spent most of our time talking about the summer newsletter. It was kind of frustrating, quite honestly. I would just invite every council member. I know you all have a lot on your plate. But if you find an agenda for the South County Sanitation District that might have some interest to you, to attend at least one meeting and watch what goes on during those meetings. It's frustrating from my perspective, but I don't want to presuppose that you might have that opinion. I just would prefer that you see it for yourself. So I respectfully would ask that every council member, and in fact, Mr. Bergman, if you don't have a family night where maybe you could sneak over and watch one meeting too. I think the dynamics are really interesting, and I think too often people in the city spend a lot of attention on the city council, but there's auxiliary boards that need to be paid attention to, and the South County Sanitation District is a prime example. So I would just respectfully request that. Those are my reports. Thank you.
Thank you. Well said. Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. Regarding the Zone 3 Advisory Board meeting, we met on July 20th. Lopez is 59% full with 29,445 acre feet. Something I brought up that earlier, as per Jim Gehring, who sits on the Zone 3 board, that's very knowledgeable. Some creeks running into Lopez are dry and have been since May. He mentioned that some years they run until June. And I can't remember, there are one or a few running into Lopez now, but it seemed he wanted to make note that some of them were dry, and that's not always the case, especially with all the rain we've had. So it's predicted that if we have the rain that we had during the dry year, if we have that same rain this year, that we'll be back under the LRRP in October of 2018. Zone 3 approved funding of approximately $25,000 to develop a work plan on assessing the safety of Lopez Dam. You might have read something about Lopez Dam in the trip month or so ago. The work plan is required to be submitted to the governor by September 1st of 2017, and this is Councilmember Harmon's favorite thing because it's an unfunded state mandate.
Because the state blew it and horrible.
I'm just saying. I thought of you when we were speaking about this. So as you may know, on September 7th, the main spillway at Orville Dam suffered severe damage during a moderate flow release. And by February 12th, high inflows combined with damage to both the main and emergency spillways triggered an emergency evaluation evacuation order that affected 150,000 people. Because of this, the governor has ordered detailed evaluations of dam structures such as spillways. On June 12th, the Flood Control District received a letter from the California Department of Water Resources Division of Safety of Dams directing actions to implement the governor's order. At this time, there is no specific information on any issues associated with the spillway at Lopez. The identical letter was sent to approximately 70 state-regulated dams throughout California. The letter states that based on reconnaissance-level assessment, Lopez may have, quote, potential geologic, structural, or performance issues that could jeopardize its ability to safely pass a flood event. No specific issues are identified in the letter. Now, keep in mind that this is the same letter that was sent to 70 other dams, so no information. So the letter requires a work plan to be prepared, and focusing on foundation materials underlying and adjacent to the spillway and their susceptibility to erosion. Although not documented in any final official reports, it is evident that the foundation materials underlying Oroville spillway likely contributed to the failure of that structure. Therefore, one key focus of the investigation is to determine if such a failure could occur at Lopez. Costs associated with the work plan are not expected to exceed $25,000. It should be noted that Zone 3's district-funded reserves contain approximately $300,000 designated for public safety related to water quality and quantity. The $25,000 is just for the work plan, how we will inspect and look into the dam safety, basically a peer review of the data we have. The next step would be that the state would say after that work plan, okay, now you need to do a full inspection, and that would be after this, and then if there's anything wrong, then obviously repairing it. So this is sort of step one. Maybe we won't go further than this after this peer review of data when we get that to the state. Repairs and seismic retrofits have been done to the spillway in the 90s and in the 2003. I didn't quite... I had a note on that, but I couldn't determine that. So there has been substantial work that's been done there. You know, it wasn't just built, and then we've ignored it. And then also 2 weeks in August, there will be work at the treatment plant that will require Lopez to be offline for a week to 2 weeks, and this will be a good chance to see how the Century Wells along the coast respond when everyone pumps groundwater. Everyone that uses Lopez pumps groundwater instead. So, and then the Homeless Services Oversight Council met on July 19th. We have the MASH event coming up on August 9th at the South County Regional Center, and this will be from 10 to 2. If you get a chance, stop by to check it out. The goal is to connect homeless or near homeless citizens to services and help them in securing a job, housing, mental health services, haircuts, DMV cards, vaccination of their pets, etc. Lots of grant opportunities are coming forward with the county and homeless services with in regards to housing. I went over these in my last report, so I won't go into those. The point in time count is not official yet, but the numbers appear to be approximately 1,100 people are homeless in Slo County. In 2013, there was 2,180, and 2015, 1,550. So it is a decrease, but it's not official yet. And so that's all the information on that for now. Jeff?
For point of reference, from 2014, I believe that number was 3,600.
For what?
For the number of homeless in the county.
Well, no. So we do it every 2 years. That's what's required by HUD. So 2013, it was 2,180. And in 2015, it was 1,550. And now it's 1,100, supposedly.
Hmm. Wow.
Councilmember Hart.
Thank you. I must say I do enjoy the summer months because the Water Resource Advisory Committee does not meet in July and August.
So sad.
Also, the Air Pollution Control Board meeting has not met since my last report. We'll resume our meetings in September, specifically September 27th. The updates from the Five Cities Fire Authority are numerous. One thing I wanted to mention is that the Plymo vent exhaust system that this council approved has not only been installed, it is operational, so the authority thanks us for getting that money out there. I also wanted to give credit for Director Malicote for informing us that that would be a good nexus to get this exhaust into Station 1, so that's a very good thing for health.
Can I interrupt? Did they tell you that they noticed any real difference?
I didn't ask the question, but I can find out.
I'd like to just...
Basically, before the exhaust went in, they'd have to keep the doors open in the back and doors in front for the ventilation.
Yeah, yeah. I'd just
and
like to see what their thought process
was. Yeah, I'll definitely follow up on that. Good question.
Thanks.
And then some other news. Congratulations are in order for Captain Steve Whitney, who was recently promoted to Battalion Chief. B.C. Whitney has been with the authority for 15 years and has 30 years' experience working previously for Kern County. And while he was working for Kern County, he was still a reserve firefighter for AG. And also he has experience at Vandenberg Air Force Base. But wait, there's more. Engineer Sean McMahon has been promoted to captain, and firefighter Michael Lopresti has been promoted to engineer. So I also would like to extend an invitation to everybody. On Friday, this coming Friday, at 2 p.m. at Station 1, there will be a badge pinning ceremony and cake to honor Mr. Lopresti and Mr. McMahon in their recent promotions. And as a result of that, we are seeking reserve firefighters, so step on up. And then the other thing I wanted to inform you is that since July 6th, four crew members have been committed to fighting the various wildfires that have afflicted our area. It's Brush 1, and that's the crew that goes out. They are Captain Leathers, Engineer Hinden, and Firefighters Penner and Hensley. They have been working 24 hours on and 24 off since July 6th. They were first assigned to the Alamo Fire. That was looking good. They thought they were coming home, and then they were the wind shifted overnight at Whittier Fire, so they were sent down to the Whittier Fire. That assignment there, they were literally on hand crews and also assigned to structure protection in the Santa Ynez Valley. From there, they went to the Park Fire, and now they have been at the Detweil Fire in Mariposa County. The good news is when we get called out, there's a 21-day rotation, and that rotation is expected to occur around July 27th, so hopefully they will get the reprieve and be home with their family soon. And I really, I think it's goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. Not only have these gentlemen been out protecting other people's property at their risk, we also have a dynamite crew that has been working extra hours at our Five Cities Fire Authority, protecting our community as well. And then the last thing I wanted to say, I've received an interesting factoid, and that the fire engine resources that are on the Detweil Fire right now consist of the following breakout. 55%, which equates to about 261 engines, are from local government agencies. That's us. That's San Luis. That's Santa Maria, Lompoc. 22%, or about 105 engines, are from Cal OES. 18%, or about 86 engines, are from Cal Fire, and another 5%, or 26 engines, are actually from federal and other agencies. And so I think it's really remarkable, or maybe something that needs to be emphasized, that the risk that our state has to our what we call our fire season, I think it's remarkable that 55% of the response is coming out of our local jurisdictions. And I know the state, you know, supplies the planes and the helicopters and all of that, but I thought it was telling to let our community know that 55% are actually coming from our own jurisdictions. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, thanks to all of our crews that are out on those fires. I know that's a tremendous extra workload.
Indeed, it's very humbling. As you go towards mine, it's much less interesting when I have to say it. And a thank you to our firefighters and all of our public safety people. Thank you very much to the city manager for attending the CJPIA. The one thing I had to do all year, and I didn't get there, so I owe you one, Jim. Thank you for reporting out on that. The only thing I have to report out on is the Tourism Marketing Committee. And I think I was trying to decide how to report out to this council after the meeting this week. And suffice it to say, I have some pretty serious procedural concerns about how that committee is being run and how monies are being spent. I've begun to discuss that with the city manager about processes. So I think, you know, we talked at, I think it was our last city council meeting, about getting a little bit more information, because this body is ultimately responsible for the expenditure of those funds, but really has been hands-off. And I guess I'll just say that it's time to be hands-on. So I don't think anything's wrong. Don't get me wrong. There's just, I don't think there's checks and balances in place. So I'll be working on that, and I'll bring some more information to you through the city manager as we kind of figure out some of that going forward in the next few meetings. But I just want to let you know that those discussions between us have begun, and I'm kind of carrying forward the wishes of this council as we start to kind of maybe get a better handle on what's going on in those meetings.
Is the board very full good now?
It is full.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thanks to your dad. And that concludes my report, so I didn't have anything else to report.
Moving on then to council communications.
Yeah. I just wanted to wish my husband happy birthday.
All right.
Happy birthday. I'm sure he's at home watching this.
I'm sure he is.
Because sometimes he does. He has it on when I walk in. He's pretending. Anyway, so I'll be home soon, I think. Look, it's only 8 o'clock. Crazy.
It just changes. I don't have any council communications. But I do appreciate Council Member Ray's report out and the plan that you proposed. I'm anxious to see the results of that, so I appreciate that. Other than that,
the only thing I have is that tomorrow, I believe at 4:30 at Grover Beach City Hall, the Sanitation District Board will be meeting, but it's a closed session item on potential litigation, which is carrying forward from about 2 or 3 past meetings. The next regular meeting of the Sanitation District Board will be a week from tomorrow, also at the Grover Beach City Hall at 6 p.m. At this time, then, it's any closing community comments or suggestions? Hearing none at the time, I'll close that. And we have a closed session this evening. And I'll ask our city attorney to please announce the closed session.
The city council will be going into closed session for a conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation, appeal of CalPERS determination dated January 26, 2017.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any public comment on the closed session item? Okay, hearing none, we'll move to closed session.